Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we'll begin with the new adventures of Nero Wolf and the Impolite Corpse, episode from that series, first aired December 8th of 1950, and its crime classics, and the younger brothers, Why Some of Them Grew No Older. That episode aired January 6th, 1954.
Ladies and gentlemen, that phone bell means adventure.
Hello?
Hello?
The young man answering the phone is Archie Goodwin. And the mountain of a man engaged in deep thought in the oversized armchair is Nero Wolf.
What was that? Somebody's going to be murdered who has no manners? Well, what do you want Nero Wolf to do? Teach him manners? Oh. Hold on. Mr. Wolf.
Yes, Archie?
We've got a prospective client. In case someone she knows gets murdered, she'd like you to do something about it.
Very well. However, I advise her...
Yes?
Not to get murdered herself. I never take a corpse for a client.
Greatest detective in the world.
Yes, Archie is so right. He is the greatest detective in the world, and the fattest, and the least energetic. He's Nero Wolf, created by Rex Stout, and brought to you over this NBC network in a new series of adventures by Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight, it's the case of the Impolite Corpse. It began on a certain night at 8:40 when Walter Channing, an advertising executive, was dictating in his office to his charming secretary, Brenda Barclay.
Brenda, take a memo.
Yes, Mr. Channing.
This is to be mimeographed and sent to the entire staff.
The entire staff, yes, sir.
Notice, effective at once, 1 hour lunch periods will be strictly enforced. Employees will post time of departure and time of return. Yes, what is it?
Mr. Channing...
Bennett, I'm busy.
Well, I've got to see you, Mr. Channing. About this afternoon...
This afternoon was unfortunate, Bennett, but it happened.
I lost my temper. I'm sorry.
So am I.
Mr. Channing, I've been with the firm 14 years, and I... Well, because a man blows up once in 14 years...
Mr. Channing's office.
Oh, you've got to reconsider. That's all, Mr. Channing.
I never reconsider, Bennett.
It's your wife.
But Mr. Channing...
That will be all, Bennett.
It won't be all. You can't wipe out 14 years of a man's life. Even you can't do that, Channing.
It's Mrs. Channing on the phone.
Oh. Hello? You're where? That's in this building. Since when has Dr. Ellis kept evening office hours? I told you there's nothing wrong with you. No, I can't. I don't know when I'll be through. And I don't want you hanging around up here. Well, take a cab or walk. I don't care what you do. What? I can't understand you. What? Goodbye, Doris. Where was I?
Walter.
Yes?
You are going to reconsider about Tom Bennett, aren't you?
Bennett was insolent this afternoon. I won't tolerate insolence. Yes?
Shine, Mr. Channing?
Shine? No! What's he doing down here this time of night?
Half the staff's working overtime. Kelly's an enterprising shoeshine boy. Might have missed someone on his rounds this afternoon. Walter, about Tom Bennett.
Forget Bennett!
Look, you upset the inkwell.
Quick, blot the stuff.
Yes, of course. Did any spill on you?
Spot up my trouser cuff. Lucky you didn't get on the carpet.
Walter, about Tom Bennett.
I told you to forget Bennett.
All right, Walter, all right.
Oh, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you'd be better off to use him as a model.
A model?
If he knows he's not wanted around here... He'll have the self-respect to get out.
Meaning?
Well, you've known for a long time you're not wanted. And you're still here.
How you'd like to fire me.
Denying that would be silly.
I've been with this firm 15 years in January. Employees get a bonus of stock shares after 15 years' service. That's what I'm waiting for, and you know it.
Suppose we get back to that memorandum.
You'd like to get me out before I collect those shares, wouldn't you?
I said let's get on with the memo.
You'd be petty enough to do it, too, if you knew how.
There may be a way.
There isn't, and you know it. I'm too careful. You can't fire me without cause, and I've given you no cause, Walter. Nothing you can possibly dictate one of your vicious little memorandums about.
Don't try my patience too far, Brenda.
Walter, Walter. This can't be us talking like this. You and me hating each other.
I find it remarkable there ever was anything between us except hate.
Walter.
I mean it. Look at you. You were flashy when I met you. You're getting flashier. That means cheaper, Brenda.
Oh, stop it.
Too much lipstick? Too much rouge? Hair too bright? Dress too tight? You're trying too hard, Brenda. You're labeling yourself like a sound wagon.
I wonder what it is that stops me from killing you.
Cowardice, of course. Now, when you've stopped sniveling, we'll get on with a memorandum. You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Notice. In the interest of economy and efficiency, junior executives will confer in the conference room, not in private offices. Mid-afternoon coffee and personal phone calls and daily shoe shines will be eliminated.
Your name is Barclay, Brenda Barclay. Very well, Miss Barclay. What can I do for you?
Mr. Wolf, I don't know how to begin.
Well, maybe I can make this easier all around by briefing Mr. Wolf on the Walter Channing case. Hey, that's funny.
What?
Violet eyes. I always thought there was something the poets made up.
Archie.
Huh? Oh, the Channing case, yes.
One moment, Miss Barclay. Look this way, please. To me, an eye is functional object found in mammals, birds, fish, potatoes, and horticulture. Thank you. Go on, Archie.
Walter Channing was the boy wonder of advertising. At 33, executive vice president of Winslow Hart and Straitmeyer. Just 24 hours ago, they found him at his desk, shot through the heart.
They? Who is they?
A night porter and a shoeshine boy, is that right?
Yes.
He'd been dead about an hour. The bullet went through Channing, his desk chair, and lodged in the windowsill behind him. Police thought at first it was suicide.
The gun?
.38, found it on the floor, 10 feet away. No fingerprints, anyhow, no clear ones.
Seldom are on a gun butt. You say suicide was suspected. Why? The gun was 10 feet from the body.
It was the smudges.
Smudges?
Powder burns. According to the papers, he was sitting at his desk. There were no signs of a struggle. The gun was held against his chest and fired.
But it wasn't suicide, Mr. Wolf. Walter Channing would never have killed himself.
The police have already decided that, finally, according to the evening papers.
And I presume you, Miss Barclay, are a suspect.
No, not yet.
But you expect to be. That's why you came to me.
When the police talked to her, Doris, his wife. I've been Walter Channing's secretary for 8 years. At one time, we thought we were in love.
Mrs. Channing was aware of this?
Yes. Oh, it was a long time ago. It was over. It was finished a long time ago, but she never believed that. Neither did Alan.
Alan who?
Alan Melick, head of the media department at the agency. We were going to be married when Walter and I... Well,
decided you were in love. Miss Barclay, who finally decided you were not? You or Mr. Channing?
He did.
I see. Mr. Melick believes you did not share this change of heart.
Yes. Oh, he's such a fool.
I dare say you fear Mrs. Channing or Mr. Melick or both will reveal this ill-fated romance.
You know what the papers will make of it, what the police will try to make of it.
Miss Barclay, did you kill Channing?
No. Oh, no, I swear I didn't. Oh, Mr. Wolf, I didn't.
Please, for heaven's sake, no tears. Archie, put her in a cab.
Yes, sir.
Then come up to the plant room. There are some things I'll want you to execute for me.
Yes, sir.
Women. Bah!
Yes, Mr. Goodwin, I'm Abe Jackson, a night porter. I was working late that night. Mr. Channing, his secretary, Mr. Bennett, Mr. Melick, and his secretary. About 10:30, I met the shoeshine, Kelly, on Mr. Channing's floor. There was a light burning in Channing's place. We went in to turn it off, Kelly and me, and there he was, sitting at his desk, a hole as big in his chest.
Tell me, Mr. Bennett, did Channing have any enemies in the agency?
Channing was a slave driver, Mr. Goodwin. The girls hated him, the men were afraid of him. He'd send out memos like this one around. Yeah, take a look at it. It's typical. No coffee, no shoeshines, no office conferences. If you want my opinion as one employee out of 150, whoever killed Walter Channing did the rest of us a favor.
You're Amy Long, secretary to Alan Mielick. Now, what can you
tell... I can tell you plenty. How she jilted Mr. Mielick, took up with Mr. Channing, got thrown over by him. I wouldn't go so far as to say Brenda Barclay would murder anyone. But if she did, Walter Channing would be 1A.
Channing get his shoe shined on you?
I called the agency man, sir. You know, it was Jackson and me found him. Everyone else had gone and left himself, poor soul, sitting at his desk, dead.
This specimen of an anonymous train orchid. Beautiful, isn't it, Mrs. Channing? Mr. Mielick?
I could never quite like orchids. They have no smell, you know.
It's pretty all right, but tulips are more in my line, Mr. Wolf.
Tulips, Mr. Mielick?
I had a stand of emperors this spring.
Emperors, come in, Archie. Emperors, Mr. Mielick?
That's the name of a tulip, Mr. Wolf.
A peasant flower, I've heard of it, of course. Archie, Mrs. Channing, Mr. Mielick, my assistant, Mr. Goodwin.
Mr. Goodwin.
I didn't know you had company.
Mr. Wolf asked us here to explain why Brenda Barclay is worried.
And you have both agreed to respect her position.
Brenda ought to know I'd never tell the police anything to get her into trouble.
Fooey.
Sir? He said fooey, Mr. Mielick, meaning he doubts what you say and does not admit your right to say it.
Archie, Mr. Mielick, you say you would never intentionally inform on Miss Barclay.
Certainly not.
The tongue slips, sir. We would expect you to guard yours.
What? Do you think
what
that...
I started to say. You asked us here because Brenda Barclay is your client. I despise Miss Barclay. Everyone knows that and why. But I wouldn't stoop to implicating her in murder.
You believe her innocent then, Mrs. Channing?
I believe she lacks the gumption to pull a trigger. Poison, I wouldn't put past her at all. Mr. Mielick, would you be kind enough to see me home?
Of course, Mrs. Channing. Good day, Mr. Wolf.
Good day.
And Mr. Goodwin.
You have, I suppose, an exhaustive report from me, Archie.
7 pages of notes.
Save them and get me a bottle of beer.
You're in a rosy mood. What happened?
I said I would like a bottle of beer.
No, you wouldn't.
Archie, you better...
Don't puff up about it. Those vest buttons won't stand the strain. I can't get you a bottle of beer.
Why not?
You ordered me to hold you to 4 a day.
I rescind the order.
You also ordered me not to let you rescind the order. What's the matter with you, anyhow?
I've had to entertain 2 very dull people too long.
Both those dull people are prime suspects. Mrs. Channing is a woman scorned. Mielick lost his girl to the guy who was killed.
I can't blame her for throwing him over. Archie, the man grows tulips.
What?
Tulips. Well, give me a report.
I checked the agency, everybody who was working down there the night of the murder. Also, I dropped in on Inspector Kramer at homicide. Also, I visited the morgue.
Why the morgue?
Because if I hadn't, you'd have said, why not the morgue?
Go on.
I drew a blank there. Kramer let me look at the clothes Channing was wearing. There was an ink stain on the left trouser cuff.
An ink stain?
And a hole through his shirt front with plenty of powder smudge, like the paper said. He was shot with a .38 at point-blank range, sitting down.
An impolite corpse.
What?
Discourteous. He didn't rise to meet his murderer. That is most significant, Archie.
I know. I've got a theory about this case.
No theories. Facts, if you please.
But look, Channing owned a .38. That's a fact. It's disappeared. That's another fact. The murder gun was a .38 with the numbers filed off, and it could be Channing's own gun.
Thereby proving what, Archie?
That his wife had access to it.
Your theory involves Mrs. Channing, then?
And Mielick. She decides her husband is less trouble to her, dead than alive.
A regrettable tendency of wives. Have you noticed?
And she sells Mielick on the idea. Now, that wouldn't be hard. They figure to make it look like suicide, but Mielick loses his head and runs, drops the gun on his way out, and... Oh, you don't buy it.
Enough of theories. The facts, Archie. Out of your notebook.
1. 9 people were on the scene that night, working late for one reason or another.
Mrs. Channing tells me she was visiting a doctor's office in the same building, by the way.
2. Every one of those people hated Channing. 3. Here's a sample of why he wasn't popular. A
memorandum.
Dictated the night he was killed. The staff got it the next morning.
A whipcracker, Mr. Channing.
Fact 4. The ink stain on his trouser cuff was partly rubbed out.
With what?
Cleaner of some kind. I didn't get the brand. Fact 5. There's a spot on the carpet near Channing's chair.
Spot of what? Ink? Blood?
Looks like ink.
It looks like him.
Well, I didn't analyze it on the spur of the moment. My chemical set isn't working so good, boss.
Phooey. Archie, I want two things.
Yes, sir?
Get over to headquarters. The police have Channing's trousers. Suggest to Inspector Kramer that he have the stain analyzed. Suggest also that the spot on the carpet be analyzed at the same time. Be around him when the information arrives.
This is Be Kind to the Police Week?
Phooey. I never have sought to beat the police on matters of fact, only on interpretation, deduction. Get going. Oh, and Archie.
Yes?
When you return, I should discourse upon the sanctity of desk hood.
The sanctity of what hood?
Desk hood. Now be off with you, and please remember you're tracking a murderer. Don't stub your toe.
Goodwin, the thing on the carpet was a dye of some kind.
Dye, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How long will it take the lab to give you the analysis on it, Inspector?
Oh, not very long. I've got the report on what was used on the trouser cuff right now, though.
And?
They found traces of carbon tetrachloride.
Wait a minute. This goes in the notebook. Okay, carbon tetrachloride.
And something else. Goodwin, what's Wolf after?
Interpretations was what he said, Inspector. You object?
No. Maybe I'll get an interpretation, too. The something else was perchloroethylene.
Why, Inspector, such language.
What is it, Miss Barkley?
You've got to come to Mr. Channing's office right away, Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Goodwin has been to your office. Everything I need to know,
You've got to come, Mr. Wolf.
Nonsense. I don't go out. My digestion disapproves of it. I disapprove of it.
But, Mr. Goodwin, he's in danger.
What's that?
Terrible danger. He needs you here at once.
Archie, danger? Let me talk to him.
Please, come. Hurry.
What's happened? Hello? Barkley! Fritz, get out of the car. Bring me my wool muffler and worsted vest. See if you can find my galoshes. Confound it, I've got to go out.
Going up. Step to the rear of the car, please. Mister, will you please step back?
I'm back as far as I can go.
You are?
Elevators. Contraptions for little men. Come, take me up, young man.
Hold that car. I'm late for a date with a blonde. 16th floor, buddy.
Evening, Mr. Goodwin.
Good evening.
I was told you were in danger.
Danger? Mr. Wolf! What are you doing out down here?
Miss Barkley's idea.
About me being in danger?
Obviously, she was lying. I suspected at the time. But I fell in with a suggestion. I'm anxious to end the case. My presence here is needed.
Don't understand why she'd do such a thing. And why is your presence needed?
16th floor.
It's a matter of, perspective.
Brenda's got a very nice perspective. She'll be around here someplace. The agency's got this whole floor.
Her office?
Down this corridor, next to Channing's. Well, Kramer came through on those reports from the lab. That smudge on the carpet wasn't ink. It was a dye. Powdered aniline. Brenda!
Oh, Mr. Wolf, thank heavens you're here.
Hey, I'm here, too.
The police, they questioned me again this afternoon. I'm so frightened, Mr. Wolf. You've got to find the murderer before they...
Baby, take it easy.
Hello, Archie.
Hello. What's the idea of trying to pull a fast one on Mr. Wolf?
Well, I just had to see him. Please understand.
Is this Channing's office?
Yes.
You told him I was in danger.
Last, the place to sit down.
Well, I had to tell him something to get him down here.
He's not happy. You comfortable there, sir?
Miss Barkley, come here.
Mr. Wolf, I can explain. I thought if you were here where it happened, I mean, if you could see for yourself, then you'd...
Young woman, there are many things I'd like to say to you.
Oh, now, wait a minute. She was scared, boss.
However, I'm too short of breath to do them justice. Archie.
Yes?
Round up everyone concerned with this case.
Right now?
Including Mrs. Channing. Get them in here.
Yes, sir.
You help him, Miss Barkley, and close that window.
Yes, Mr. Wolf.
Fresh air. I've had enough today, thanks to you, to last me a lifetime. If after all that exposure, I live a lifetime.
What's going on here, anyhow?
A tea party. Find yourself seats. Keep your knees steady. All right, Mr. Wolf, everybody's here.
Mr. Shoeshine Kelly?
Here, sir.
It was you who found the body.
Him and me, Mr. Wolf. I'm Abe Jackson, a nightman.
You gentlemen can help us if you will.
Oh, to be sure, Mr. Wolf.
I'd like to know the exact position of the body when you found it.
Well, he was sitting up.
That's it, sir. Sitting up straight as you please.
You'll oblige me if you'll demonstrate. Sit in the chair, please.
His chair, sir?
If you please.
Abe, you.
Yeah. Oh, no, not me. Not on your life.
There's no easy thing you ask, Mr. Wolf. I'll oblige you. It was like this, I'd say.
You agree, Mr. Jackson?
A little more to the right, maybe. Yeah, that's the way it was.
Archie.
Yes, sir?
Help me with a brief recapitulation.
Well, so far as we know, Channing made no outcry.
Therefore, he could not have been startled by the appearance of the killer.
There were powder burns on the body.
Therefore, the gun was against Channing when it was fired. His own hand couldn't have held it closer.
Nobody heard the shot, probably because this office is soundproofed. The gun that killed him was lying on the floor 10 feet from the desk.
In the direction of flight through that door. Go on, Archie.
The killer was almost certainly well known to Channing, or Channing wouldn't have let him come that close without a struggle or an alarm. Also, the killer had access to this office. Another proof that he's not a stranger.
One more point, if I may, Archie. The killer, he or she, is present here now.
Here in the room.
Quiet, everyone.
We come now to the point I mentioned to you last night, Archie. The point I call the sanctity of deskhood.
Sanctity of what?
Deskhood, Mrs. Channing. Explain, Archie.
Still figure it so important?
Absolutely essential.
Well, I wrote it here somewhere. Deskhood refers to that area behind a desk where a man earns his livelihood, makes his career, builds his reputation.
You mean here, where I'm sitting?
So long as a man sits at his desk, he enjoys a curious area of privacy. He is remarkably safe from intrusion. That's it, Mr. Wolf.
The sanctity of deskhood. Think about it a moment. You'll see what I mean.
Nonsense. I've gone around that desk hundreds of times. I'm sure she has many more hundreds. If you mean what I think you mean, Mrs. Channing, you...
Please, ladies. Mrs. Channing, when you approached your husband at his desk, what did he do?
What did he... Why, he stood up and...
He stood up. Sparkly, you agree? Well,
yes, he'd have to stand up. At least he always did.
But for his murderer, he did not. Archie, resume from your notes, please.
Well, whoever killed Walter Channing went around the desk without Channing rising, held a gun to his chest, and pulled the trigger.
Excuse me. If you will go behind the desk and stand facing Mr. Kelly, Archie.
Here. This the way you mean?
You know the angle of the body wound or the hole in the chair?
There wasn't any angle. One was in a straight line with the other.
From where you stand now in front of Mr. Kelly, if you wish to inflict an identical wound upon him, could you do it?
Not from where I stand. I'd have to kneel.
You'd have to kneel. Do so. Note, please, the murder tableau.
What do you mean?
Question now, who could kneel before Channing, get close enough to kill him from that position without alarming him in the least?
Kelly.
The shoeshine man.
Hey, wait a minute now.
Shut up, you, and sit there.
His motive is crystal clear.
The memorandum.
You have a copy, Archie?
In my notebook.
Ah, yes. Miss Barkley, read the part which could explain Mr. Kelly's action.
No,
the memo was all over the office. Kelly must have seen it.
Oh, wait a minute now. A notice effective at once. Yes, here it is. In the interest of economy, daily shoe shines will be eliminated.
That'd cut off Kelly's bread and butter.
Kelly, I can't believe it.
Nor can I.
What?
It's obvious Kelly murdered Walter Channing.
Mr. Wolf, now listen, I did nothing
but
to pay
the you. Obvious can be too obvious.
Meaning what exactly?
Archie?
Yes, sir?
Brief these people on the ink-stained trousers.
Channing spilled ink on his trouser cuff the night he was murdered. Somebody tried to clean the spot off.
With what?
According to the police analysis, carbon tetrachloride and perchloroethylene showed up.
Both non-inflammable ingredients used in many commercial cleaners.
Exactly what are you getting at, Mr. Wolf?
One moment, Mrs. Channing. Mr. Goodwin also has an analysis of the spot on the carpet behind the desk. Archie?
A powder form of dye, aniline dye.
Used in what, perhaps?
Well, the lab suggested a shoe dressing.
I got no powder dye. I swear I ain't, Mr. Wolf.
I'm sure you haven't, Mr. Kelly. You'll find this particular type of dressing is used on women's shoes, suede shoes, usually.
I don't understand.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yes, Archie?
If a woman... suppose a woman knelt in front of Channy to clean that ink spot off his trouser cuff. That smudge could have rubbed off the tip of her shoe onto the carpet.
Exactly. I believe you'll find a typewriter cleaner contains tetrachloride and perchloroethylene.
Something else just occurred to me. That memo was sent around the morning after Channing was killed.
I never thought of that.
True, Archie. And for only one purpose, to point suspicion at Kelly.
But when the police didn't take the hint...
Go on, Archie. What then?
Somebody else was brought down here who would. Comes around to three questions, doesn't it? Who knew about the memo? Who had access to Channing's file where he kept his gun? And who made sure Nero Wolfe would see the evidence against Kelly?
Three questions, Archie, with one answer that spells the name of the murderess. Our own client, Brenda Barkey. Steak, Archie, man, did you like it?
I'm not hungry.
Indeed, I suggest a tonic.
That reminds me. I had a call.
You had?
Doris Channing. She had some idea about my explaining things to her.
She found my explanation insufficient?
No, but she felt it lacked the personal touch.
Phooey. Hand me a can of beer. However, you do have the evening off.
Yes, sir.
Keep out of trouble. Doris Channing is a blonde. That is trying to keep out of trouble.
In the company of a blonde who wants to. Good night, sir.
Good night, Archie. Good night.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by William Kendall Clark was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edmund Fadiman program produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin, and Donald Morrison, Betty Lou Gerson, Bill Johnstone, Howard McNear, Mary Lansing, and Barney Phillips. Next week, at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you the case of The Girl Who Cried Wolf. John Storm speaking. Nero Wolfe, Archie, and all of our cast hope that our listeners have taken time out from this busy Christmas season to help brighten some youngster's Christmas day. Be sure to send a thing, your choice of anything you think a child would like for Christmas, to the groups in your own town who are distributing these toy gifts to less fortunate children. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That's the way Missouri sounded just after the Civil War. Wind through elm trees, wind through long grass, wind blowing up the dust and puffing it down the wagon road. And listen again. Another Missouri sound. A rope. A new rope, freshly purchased at a crossroads store and cut into six equal lengths to support six bodies of approximately equal size. By neck, six bodies. Six Missouri boys in Union uniforms, newly come home from the war, waylaid by Cole Younger and his brothers, who were on a perpetual rampage until they were stopped. So tonight, my report to you on the Younger brothers, why some of them grew no older.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Before the Civil War, there was a border war. The boys from Kansas took gun to hand and shot up the boys from Missouri. And the next Saturday night, vice versa. It got so they didn't wait till Saturday night. Every day was bloody day for everybody. The question now arises, why? The answer is simple. A difference of opinion about slavery. And they couldn't wait till war was declared. Raid and pillage and slaughter in bloody colors smeared on in bold brushstrokes. And one day, through this never-never land of pistol and knife and torch, there walked a young man. His name was Cole Younger. He was leading a horse and buckboard, and when he came to a certain shack by the road, he was at the end of his journey. People around saw he wasn't armed, so they let him through. They saw his face and the look in his eye, and they let him through.
Ain't you learned to knock on a door, sonny?
You're Mr. Quantrell, ain't you?
I admire politeness in young men. You try not
to... My dad is dying on a buckboard outside. You come see.
I seen dying, sonny.
You come see.
All right. He's dead, sonny. I'm sorry.
Shot him while he's standing there just talking to him. Just saying why were they on his land. Shot him because he raised his voice to them.
Kansans?
Jayhawkers from Kansas. North boys.
What are you needing, sonny? A burying for your daddy?
A burying's a private thing, and it's a thing I'll do myself, Mr. Quantrell. When are you riding into Kansas to kill you some Jayhawkers?
Tonight, maybe.
After I bury my daddy, maybe.
Soon after that.
I'm coming with you.
Of course you are.
Not right after he buried his daddy, but soon after, Cole Younger had to take an oath before he became a member of Quantrell's Raiders. It was called the Black Oath, black being the color Quantrell admired most, since it suggested death and danger. The candidate was placed between four men clothed in black, wearing hideous masks representing the devil. First, these men clattered long, keen swords together, then pointed one at the candidate's throat, one at his heart, one at his arms, one at his feet, while the oath was spoken.
The purpose of war is to kill. I will fight because I want no other occupation. I will tear down, waste, and despoil my enemies. By the powers of darkness here under the black arch of heaven's avenging symbol, I pledge and consecrate my heart, my brain, my body, and my limbs to exterminate Federals, Jayhawkers, and their abettors. And if I fail in my oath, may an unmerciful devil tear out my heart and roast it over flames of sulfur.
Well, by the time war came, Cole Younger was 2 years older. He was Quantrell's first lieutenant.
This rise from the ranks because he was a smart lad, a reader of books, a blower-up of ammunition trains, a burner-down of farm buildings, a pillager par excellence, a murderer meticulous, in that he only shot males, and mostly always from the neck up. An exception to this last was the time in Lawrence, Kansas, in a bar, on Christmas Eve.
And I offer you a drink, one and all, so step up to the bar. And you're my friends, one and all. Ain't that so, Billy? Billy? Drunken friend Billy. You sleep so sound, Billy. And don't you too, Johnny. You sleep because you got no sleep at Shiloh. Tell them how it was at Shiloh, should I? Listen, all of you, all around.
Jack.
You step right up and have a drink, courtesy of me and Bill and Johnny and the Union Army.
Yank.
Huh?
What you doing around these parts?
Sent us out here to get us Quantrell.
What's your name?
Martin Wallace Martin.
A sergeant from the stripes on your uniform.
And my drunken friend Billy's my corporal.
You've seen a lot of killing, ain't you?
Didn't you hear? We were at Shiloh.
Were you brave at Shiloh?
Huh?
Brave. Like you are now.
What are you talking about?
Talking a streak just before you're gonna die.
You ain't too tall a fella to be talking. Oh.
Billy. Corporal Billy, wake up. Now you come on, open your eyes, Bill. You see this, Bill? Johnny, Yankee Johnny, you're a bright one, up and ready. Why are you shivering, Johnny? Why are you shivering so? Merry Christmas to one and all.
John Younger, aren't you?
Yeah, but what's the idea of all you men busting in here?
Vigilantes.
What you want here?
Cole Younger's your brother, isn't he?
Yeah.
Where is he?
He ain't here.
Where is he?
Fighting a war.
Shooting three men down, two of them sleeping, ain't fighting a war. Where is he?
I told you...
Pinkert! Throw that rope over that rafter. Where's your brother, John?
Look, I don't know where Cole is. Texas, maybe. Louisiana, maybe.
Oh, all right, man.
You want me to holler. You want me to scream mercy. Well, hang me and see if I do it.
All right. All right, John. You're biting a lip when I put the noose around your neck, but that ain't hollering, is it, John? And drawing it tight. You ain't hollering either. Where you hiding coal?
All right, Pinkett.
Let him down. Loosen the rope a little, John, so you can holler. Or tell me where coal is.
You'll rot before I tell you. You'll... Right before I tell you.
Regular brother to Cole, ain't you?
Try me.
I just tried you. The end of a rope.
A dozen of you did that. One at a time.
Pinkett!
Wait.
All right. We'll wait.
You're gonna kill me. I gotta say something. I gotta tell you about Cole. Why, if you were licking his boots, you'd be in the right relation to him. He's fighting for what he knows in himself.
Cutthroat, right. Your brother isn't a bloodletter and... Kicker, are you? That's good. That's very fine. Because now you'll kick high ones and low ones in the air all around. Pinkett!
But they didn't hang him until he was dead. They hung him till just before he was dead, and then let him down, and beat him up, and left him. But they didn't find out where Cole was, and that spunky brother of his knew all the time where Cole was, in the hills not 2 miles away, down the road and through a pass and up a hill and 2 miles away.
Hi, John.
They came looking for you, Cole.
They tried to kill you.
Did a thing with a rope.
Here. Thing like that, and you didn't say a word, did you?
I'm coming along with you, Cole. From now on.
That's good.
Listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Captain Kennelly of CBS Radio's 21st Precinct called to remind us that the station house will be shut down this Friday night while the program moves. Beginning next Wednesday, at a somewhat earlier hour on most of these same stations, 21st Precinct will join Crime Classics, Crime Photographer, and the rest of your Wednesday Stars Address dramatic thrillers. Listen for the 21st Precinct a week from tonight at its new time. And now once again, Thomas Highland in the second act of Crime Classics and his report to you on The Younger Brothers, Why Some of Them Grew No Older. On April 9th, 1865... General Lee surrendered, and the war was over. A thing happens when a war is ended. A pall hangs over the land, and then suddenly there's a maelstrom of activity. Returnings, accountings of gains and of losses, dead battles fought again on saloon tables, lost legs bragged about, the blinded eye, the maimed arm, the victory ball and the brain shocked from its moorings and adrift. And finally, the bright young men funneling into the area of sorrows and devastation to sell, to cheat, to build. Which was Missouri in 1866?
Six of them Yankees, Cole.
Yeah, and one shot scared them.
All right, men, get them! That don't look like none of them are armed, Cole.
Yeah. Who's speaking for these men?
I be.
Who are you? What the six of you doing riding here?
I ask you the same question. Well, what's 50 of you doing stopping us? There must be 50 of you.
I'm Cole Younger. That one over there is John Younger. That's my brother, Jim. And Bobby's...
The Younger boys, huh?
That's right, mister.
I hear you believe the war ain't over.
Guess you believe like me. Else why are you riding in uniform?
Well, you're not a simple man from what I heard, Younger. You know why we're uniformed. We're riding to Indians.
John.
Bill.
Hang them, John.
In the name of heaven, you wouldn't hang the six of us.
John.
Bill.
The wind and the rope. You remember. Cole Younger and his brothers hanged 6 soldiers. You might ask how come Bob and Jim Younger were with Cole and John all of a sudden. Well, they were. After the war, there was a reunion, and the 4 of them decided to cast lots together, as the saying goes, to join forces, to butter their bread all on one side. Anyhow, for the next 10 years, the brothers Younger robbed and killed and burned. John Younger was shot down by a detective in St. Clair and was buried near there. Then, on the 7th of April, 1876, in a shack on the skirts of Northfield, Minnesota.
It's them, Cole.
All right, Bob, open the door for them.
Come on in, boys.
Hi, Jesse.
Hello, Cole. You met my brother Frank, haven't you?
Sure, everybody knows everybody. James boys, Jess and Frank.
Cole.
Uh-huh.
You told your boys how we're gonna do that bank.
Don't you worry about it.
I ain't worried about nothing, Cole. I just asked you a question.
Don't worry, Jess. They'll do what they gotta do.
They'd better. Everything ready?
Sure.
Town people having that political meeting like you said they would be?
Yes, I know.
Then we don't have to wait for nothing.
For nothing at all.
Cole.
Uh-huh.
A lot of money in that bank. That's good. Me and Frank talking about retiring for a little while. Going to Mexico.
Hey.
Huh?
Sniff.
What are you smelling, Cole?
Too empty.
Yes.
Just said too empty, that's all. You and me, Jess, Bob, and Frank. Rest of you, wait. Stick up, mister. Just slide everything you got through the window. Back of the window, Jess. See, he's not cheating.
All the money, ma'am. And don't scream. Just don't scream.
Not the silver, mister. Silver's too heavy to carry.
Come on, come on.
How you and Frank doing, Bob?
Good, good.
Let's get out of here. Come on, Bob, Frank.
Okay, boys.
Now, just don't gallop till we turn the corner. All of us galloping might disturb that meeting at...
What's the matter, Cole?
Too empty. Like I said.
Nothing to shiver about, Cole. There's a meeting.
Plan kind of empty. That's what these streets are. Look there, boys. Run! Run!
The bank robbery at Northfield was the turning point. The instant that the townspeople, instead of being at a meeting, had formed a posse and ambushed the outlaws, the bringers of terror became fugitives. The younger brothers had never turned tail and run before, nor had the James boys. But some loop in time, some coordinates of chance, conspired that they retreat at exactly the same moment. At darkness, they lost their pursuers, but they kept riding. It was not until almost midnight that they found a hiding place.
How's your arm, Bob? Hurts. Lucky we got away, ain't we, Cole?
We haven't done it yet.
Jim hurt bad.
Ain't riding no more.
Dying?
Maybe.
Cole?
Yeah.
Jess is fuming. I walked over in the clearing a minute ago. Him and his brother was teasing with Jim.
Take us a walk, huh? Hi, Jess.
Just looking at your brother here, Marvelin.
Oh?
How's he staying alive?
That bothering you, son?
Well, I'll tell you, Cole. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Jesse?
You talking at me, Bob Younger?
Tell my brother Cole what you've been saying about Jim.
I've been saying, Cole, your brother Jim be better off dead. Better for a lot of people.
Like who?
All of us. So we can get on our horses and start riding. How long do you think it's going to take that posse to catch up with us?
The truth is, Jesse, I haven't thought about that.
Well, now, just you think about it.
Jim can't ride, Jess.
That's what I've been saying.
What do you think we ought to do with him?
Leave him.
Oh?
Or shoot him. I'd shoot him.
Jess?
Uh-huh.
You're a dog, Jesse.
Oh? You think so, huh?
I'll tell you what else I've been thinking.
Tell me, Cole. Tell me real fast so you can get it out.
Thinking how it would be we drew on each other.
Be pretty with me.
Want to try?
Be pretty with me.
Stop! Stop it! You two loco killing each other? That's what would happen, you know it.
What do you think, Jesse?
I think maybe your brother Bob is right. But you want to try. Here I am.
You get going, Jesse.
You gonna stick around for a posse?
Maybe. Just you get going.
Not because you're saying it. Because I think it's a thing to do. Come on, Frank.
Jim. Can you hear me, brother? Your smiling makes me know you can. Now, don't you talk. Coolness to your head. Don't you worry. Nobody's going to leave you. We're going to take care of you, Jim. Get a doctor to you.
Somehow they eluded the posse from Northfield, and Jim got stronger, and they rode. There were four of them, Cole Younger and his brothers Jim and Bob, and a man named Charlie Pitts. Across Minnesota they rode and into Iowa, and now there were posses everywhere, some numbering 1,000 men. And they couldn't catch the Younger brothers. Rewards and promises by bankers and sheriffs and governors, and they couldn't catch the Youngers. The brothers, as far as anyone could tell, were headed into Missouri, but no one could catch them. And once...
Think I got one of them, Cole.
And me too.
Think there was only two?
You cover me, I'll go make sure. Thought I got you before, Sonny.
Not my pard.
Guess me and my brother both got him. You hurt bad? Crazy to try to ambush us. Only two of you, son.
Reward.
What are they offering for us?
Thousands. I don't know.
And you and your partner wanted to kill the Younger brothers.
Everybody.
They all out after the Younger brothers, huh?
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. You hurt?
Hurt.
You didn't deserve better, kid.
Two of them, Cole?
Like you said, kids. Kids. How old are you, Brother Bob? Yeah. It's a long way.
Bob, get out! Must be hundreds of them. Keep shooting, Bob, Charlie. I'll go look after Jim.
Oh,
you hit! Just keep shooting!
And at last they were surrounded. Charlie Pitts was killed almost at once, but the Younger brothers held off 100 men for hours. Finally...
Shot to pieces!
And they truly were shot to pieces. Cole had been shot 11 times, with one rifle ball under his right eye. Jim had 8 buckshot and one rifle ball in the body, plus the shattered jawbone he'd received at Northfield. And Bob's arm was practically macerated. So they were captured,
7 years of plunder, hate, and murder. Done now. The younger brothers leashed. Finally. They were tried and sentenced to life imprisonment in the penitentiary at Stillwater, Minnesota. Several newspapers tried to get Cole Younger's story, and here is a copy of the letter which he wrote to one of them.
Dear sir, without intending the least disrespect, permit me to say, positively I will have nothing to do with writing a history of any kind. As for anything since the war, a true statement would fall flat. I look upon my life since the war as a blank, and will never say anything to make it appear otherwise. The world may believe what it pleases. I have nothing to say unless it would be a request, using the language of Othello. Speak of me as I am, nothing extenuate, nor set down aught in malice. I was a soldier and fought to hurt, but I never molested a non-combatant. Truly yours, Coleman Younger.
Bob Younger died in prison in 1889. Jim and Cole were released after 25 years. In 1902, Jim committed suicide in a hotel room in St. Paul over an unrequited love. Cole lived until 1916, a quiet life. He sat on a front porch in Lee's Summit, Missouri, and whittled and rocked and talked to hardly anyone at all. But he thought a lot. In just a moment, Thomas Hyland will tell you about next week's Crime Classic. The Younger Brothers, tonight's Crime Classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed by Bernard Herrmann and conducted by Lud Gluskin. And the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Hyland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Jack Edwards was heard as Cole, Sam Edwards as Bob, and Jimmy Eagles as John Younger. Featured in the cast were Barney Phillips, Clayton Post, Bill Bissell, and Walter Tetley. Bob Lamon speaking. Here again is Thomas Hyland. Next week, South Konkan, India, in the spring of 1856. We will concern ourselves with two brothers. Their names were Kanak and Supan, and they despised each other. It's listed in my files as How Supan Got the Hook Outside Bombay. Thank you. Good night.
Two more familiar CBS radio headliners have moved. This Friday night on most of these stations where you've been accustomed to hearing Stage Struck, the Star's address now brings you the new Friday night full-hour Arthur Godfrey Digest Show, bringing you Arthur and all the little Godfreys back to nighttime radio with a bang. As for Stage Struck, this fine full-hour visit with Broadway shows and Broadway folks will be presented Sundays at the Star's address from now on. Thursday nights, Marlena Dietrich stars in Time for Love on the CBS Radio Network.
That's going to do it for another episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more, but in the meantime, you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com alongside links to our forum, Shoutcast stream, Facebook page, Twitter, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support it all, thank you very much to those who have. Thank you very much for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.